you all probably couldn't even notice that was Tim's first time ever leading that song. Before, whenever I'm sending out reminders for my lessons some weeks, I might ask the song leaders to lead a song to be able to transition well into the lesson. And I asked Tim to lead that song. And he's like, I don't know that song. I'm like, you don't? He's like, I know, but I never led. And if you don't know, there is a difference there between singing the song, maybe the part that you're familiar with, or actually leading the song. I was like, hear about this. If you want to give it a try, I'll send you a YouTube video. Tim, how many times do you think you watch that video? There we go. Boom. So if you are scared about leading a particular song leader, and you don't feel comfortable doing it, find a YouTube video of them doing that. Watch it 7 or 8 times, and you can do just as well as Tim did right there leading that song. He did a great job. Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate that. Because that transitions us very well into the lesson that we're going to consider this morning. And we're going to begin in Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13 and verse 14. The Apostle Paul writes to our brethren who are in Rome during the first century in Romans chapter 13 and verse 11. Paul states this, Romans chapter 13 and verse 11. Besides this, since you know the time, it is already the hour for you to wake up from sleep. Because now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night is nearly over and the day is near. So let us discard the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us walk with decency as in the daytime, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual impurity and promiscuity, not in quarreling and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and don't make plans to gratify the desires of the flesh. Exactly 4 weeks ago, millions and millions of people all around the world were gathered around their TV screens watching the final game of the 2019-2020 National Football League season. The 49ers were driving to close the first half, and they had a great throw from Garoppolo to Kittle, the tight end down the sidelines, and the referee threw a bogus flag, and that just really derailed the whole drive, and the half ends up coming to an end. So as the teams are going into the locker rooms to talk about their game plan for the second half, all of a sudden what I can only describe as an exotic dancing exhibition broke out at midfield, led by Jennifer Lopez and Shakira. And anyone who knew, number one, where this game was, Miami, and if you know the major demographic of Miami, Latino, and you know who these ladies are, Latinas, you could already assume what was about to take place. And those guessing, well, you would have been correct, because these two very scantily clad women and their co-performers began to dance very provocatively in the plain view of millions of people, to not my surprise and probably not many others. But there was one aspect of this performance that did catch my eye and that did surprise me. I was doing my best as it was on TV just to eat my food. Tim made some good food. A lot of people make some good food. I was just eating away. Great time to fill my belly with some food. But I looked up at one point and I noticed that there were some very young ladies on the stage. Now I remember in that moment, like, wow, what are they doing there? I had no idea who it was. A friend of mine noted, though, that would have been Jennifer Lopez's daughter at all of 11 years old. This was not only surprising to me, but I'll be honest, it was pretty saddening to see such young children participating in such a sexually charged performance. And I know I wasn't the only one uncomfortable with it, because a lot of people took to social media to express their displeasure with it, especially mothers of teenage or young boys. They talked about how upset they were that their children, their sons, were exposed to these grown women flaunting their bodies as they were doing during the most watched TV event of the year. And of course, the easy response is to, you know, simply look away or change the channel. And while we were able to do that, and many people did that, the reality is that you can't do that with real life. And that's what's sad about this thing that happened at halftime, is it's simply a small example of the difficulty of the type of society that we live in, where sexually charged behavior is just more and more prevalent today than in times past. That isn't to say that sexual temptations and sins were not present in times past. I recognize they were. We can look to the Bible and see that as being the case. But I do believe that there has been a change. A change in how these types of behaviors are more generally accepted in our society than they were years ago. I believe that that performance that took place 4 weeks ago, if that would have happened 2 decades ago, 3 decades ago, then the response would have been unanimously negative. Because at that time, though it might not have been a great deal, there was still more of a sense of decency and modesty in society than there is today, and that simply isn't the case anymore. And this leads to our considerations for tonight, where we are going to focus greatly on the need for all disciples, but especially for our youngest disciples, for them to make sure that they are guarding their hearts against the indecency and the immodesty of the society and the culture that we live in today. I know, again, that sexual temptations and sins have always been present, but let's be honest, they've not always been in our faces like they are in our day. In decades past, think about this, in decades past, if somebody wanted to go to what we'll call a gentleman's club, we know what I'm talking about here, how would they be able to do that? Well, you'd have to go to the shadiest part of town, and you would probably do it under the guise of nightfall, and you, as a man, would not want anybody to see you going in and not see anybody going out. And if you were a lady who worked at this particular establishment, you would not tell people that this is what you did on the weekend. And yet that has changed so much to the fact that there are now women who participate in that industry who are trying to form unions to garner better benefits for themselves in the work that they do. And I haven't even said anything about pornography and about the prevalence in our society and the damage that it has caused. Listen, I understand this tough subject. I understand that every person in here right now is uncomfortable. I promise you're not more comfortable than I am right now. It's tough to talk about this subject because of the sensitivity that surrounds it, but I'm telling you, this is a subject that must be discussed. I am still young enough to have a very clear memory of what it was like growing up in the culture that has progressed some, yes, but very similar to where we are today. I know the difficulties that young people face from the evil one, and I know that they're even more difficult today than they were whenever I was young 10 years ago. So I want to give encouragement this evening. I want to encourage and admonish us all to guard our hearts. The way I want to go about this is by first of all looking at the dangers that are facing our youth as they live in the society that we live in today, the sexually charged society. There are dangers that they face. There are dangers that are real that we need to recognize. And the first one is this. It is the danger of the world warping a proper understanding of sexuality. One of the purposes that God has given us His Word for, and one of the reasons why it is so easy for us to access and why there are so many Bibles in this world, which I believe is totally providential on God's part, I believe He has done this so that He can establish within us everything that we need to know in order to be pleasing to Him. That His Word is the tool through which He teaches us, He rebukes us, He corrects us, and He trains us up in righteousness. That's 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. Everything that text tells us that we need to know in order to be fully equipped to please God can be found within those pages. However, we recognize that the vast majority of our lives, they're not lived with our face buried in the Bible. That's just the reality. That we live life in the real world, which means that the evil one is doing everything that he can to make sure that whatever it is that we have learned as we have studied the Bible, that he is counteracting, that he is trying to contradict what we see and what we do and what we're taught in the world around us. Brethren, we need to recognize that the Bible teaches us everything we need to know about human sexuality. Yet what the evil one wants to do is he wants to use this culture that we live in, a sexually charged culture, to counteract those good teachings and try to warp our minds. This is especially true of our young people. Just think about the way they view the way we operate within marriage, that committed, monogamous, marital sexual union that we are committed to is laughed at by the world in so many respects. That our young people are being told that waiting until marriage to give your body to another person is old-fashioned and that it is out of style. And when our young people, when they stand up for God's design for marriage and for sexuality, and they take a strong stand, they're laughed at. They're ridiculed. They are demeaned. And there is no wonder why sometimes they begin to wonder, you know, is this really right? Is the Bible really out of date? Is it out of style? Because all around us and all around them, they see people participating in sexual acts that fall nowhere near the divine standard of Scripture. And all it takes is for their understanding to begin to be warped just a little bit. And next thing we know, their understanding has been completely perverted by the world. That's the danger that we're facing. That's the danger, especially, that our young people are facing. Young people, let me encourage you. Guard your heart. Don't allow the world to warp your understanding of God's design for the use of our bodies in a sexual manner. But then there's the second danger, and it's the danger of our faith in God being abandoned or damaged through sexual sins. We need to realize that it's not just our understanding of this issue that is important, but it is the understanding that this issue, if not properly handled, leads to disastrous and real consequences. Of course, all temptations, all sins are dangerous and can lead us down dark roads, but we need to recognize that sexual sins are especially dangerous because they come with very severe spiritual implications. And most importantly, the worst complication, the worst consequence being that we are failing to recognize that our bodies now belong to God and we are to use them in a way that glorifies Him. Turn with me, please, to 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. In this context, it seems to be that there is a misunderstanding by the Corinthians on the importance that God puts on their bodies and the way that they are used. And that seems to be the case based upon Paul quoting them and saying that everything is permissible for me. Almost this type of Gnostic type of idea that the body doesn't matter. That we can do whatever we believe and think is all that matters. We don't have to worry about the body. That's why Paul says this beginning in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12. Everything is permissible for me, but not everything is beneficial. Everything is permissible for me, but I will not be mastered by anything. Food is for the stomach and the stomach for food, and God will do me with both of them. However, notice this, however, the body is not for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. God raised up the Lord, and will also raise us up by His power. Don't you know that your bodies are a part of Christ's body? So should I take a part of Christ's body and make it a part of a prostitute? Absolutely not. Don't you know that anyone joined to a prostitute is one body with her? For Scripture says the two will become one flesh. When anyone joins to the Lord is one spirit with Him. Therefore, flee sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the person who is sexually immoral sins against his own body. Don't you know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought at a price. So glorify God with your body. This text, though it involves a very serious subject matter, it is quite simple. That because we have been bought with the blood of Christ, not only have our souls been cleansed, but our body has come under the possession of God, that it is His. He has purchased it for us. And now the expectation is that we live for Him. We use our body to honor and to glorify Him. And when we don't do that, when we use our body to participate in sexually immoral acts, then number one, we are disrespecting the bodies that God redeemed. And as Jesus died on the cross, He redeemed our bodies. Our bodies are going to be raised up in the last day. When we sin against Him, we are disrespecting those bodies. And most of all, we are disrespecting God Himself. When we allow this sexually charged culture to lead us down a road where we are participating in these types of things, we are sinning against our God. What a horrible thing to do. But we have to recognize that these temptations, these sins that are before us, they don't just affect our relationship with God, but they also affect our relationship with other people. There's a danger of damaging the relationships that we might have in the future through poor decision making. It isn't just that God is dishonored, but we run the chance of hurting other people, especially those future relationships, first and foremost, the marital relationship. Remember that these sins, they hurt our bodies. Paul even goes so far to say that if you join your body to a prostitute, you're one with a prostitute. The same principle that applies in the marriage union applies there. What strong language that is. But you got to think about it. In that moment when emotions are high and such, you don't feel the guilt. That's one of the other dangers about this type of temptation, is that in the moment, you don't feel guilt because you're not thinking clearly normally. Your emotions are aroused and you're just not in your proper state of mind. It isn't until later, so often, that the guilt and the regret really comes into play. And that especially shows up whenever it's time for you to enter into the marriage relationship and enjoy the fruits of that relationship. The words that the Hebrew writer said in Hebrews 13 verse 4, they're so important for us to remember that the marriage bed is to be that marriage is to be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept undefiled, because God will judge the sexually immoral and in adulterers. We need to recognize that in that union, in the marriage bed, we get to enjoy all the blessings of marriage guilt-free. Guilt-free because it is ordained and blessed by God. But young people, let me tell you that a failure to hold to that standard in your youth will only allow the possibility of guilt and regret to hang upon your heart later in life. And not even to mention the other dangers and damages that you open the door for the possibility to come into your life. These dangers are real. And young people, let me encourage you one more time to guard your heart. Guard your heart in this culture that we live in that seeks to influence you in evil ways. Let's shift gears, though. Let's talk about us parents and us mentors and people of influence. How is it that we can help the hearts of our youth to be guarded? What can we do to help them? Especially those who are parents. How can we help our children? The first thing we can do is we can make sure that we are being proactive in teaching early, honestly, and often. Early, honestly, and often. One of the goals for this study that I've had is to be able to encourage every parent to create within their homes good, wholesome, and beneficial dialogue that can help us in the training up of our children in the Lord, and especially on this particular subject. We know, if I polled the parents here, I would ask, do you think it's important to talk to your kids about this subject? And every single parent here would say, yes, absolutely. What are we doing? We say it is important. And I truly believe, every person here believes it is important that we discuss this subject with our kids. But often what we do doesn't follow with what we say. And let's be honest, there's a really good reason for that. Because it is uncomfortable. It is awkward. Like I said, it's awkward for me to discuss this publicly with you. It's just as awkward, if not more awkward, to sit down with your child and to talk about this subject. It's simply a difficult conversation to have. Yeah, I can remember the talk with my mom. I knew it was coming, by the way, because I found a book that she had checked out at the library. I still don't know if she knows that or not. But I can remember vividly, I remember when this talk happened. My mom was smart. okay? I give her credit here. She did it while we were in the car. So we were trapped. I couldn't run to the bathroom. Couldn't say, oh, I heard somebody's door. Couldn't do nothing. I was trapped in the car. Now, I can remember right now, I can remember where we were in Cleveland, Tennessee, whenever we had this talk. I think we were on the way to school one day or to some event at the school. And we had this talk, and it was a necessary talk. I was there. My sister was there. I was probably middle school, so she would have been 2 or 3 years behind me. My youngest sister would have been 2 or 3 years old, so she wasn't obviously participating in this. But I can remember this taking place. And yet, I have to admit that everything she told me, I already knew. Everything she told me, I had already heard before at school and out in the world. But what I didn't hear from the world and what I didn't hear from school was accurate teaching on God's view of sexuality. And that's what my mom stressed to us, was the need to see this from a biblical perspective. And again, it's awkward, but I want to offer this. How can it become less awkward? Well, normally things become less awkward the more we talk about them, and the more open and honest we are whenever we have these types of discussions. And the more comfortable our children are with us talking about this conversation, guess who they're going to start coming to when they have questions? Not friends at school, not people of the world. They're going to come to us. And parents, we should greatly desire that. We should desire so greatly for our children to feel comfortable coming to us to talk about this subject, because we, as disciples of Christ, we're going to approach it the right way. But that demands that we cultivate the type of relationship and open dialogue with our parent, with our children, that makes that possible. And when I'm talking about speaking with them openly and honestly and accurately, that means explaining to them the subject from the biblical viewpoint. I mean, starting with God made man and woman in the beginning of Genesis chapter 2. And that God joined man and woman together, that they left father and... Well, they would leave father and mother, not Adam and Eve. But later on, man would leave father and mother, and woman would leave father and mother. And they'd be joined together in marital union, and they would become one flesh. And they would be that way for life. That's God's plain design. Genesis chapter 2, Matthew chapter 19. If you want to talk about the sexual union, 1 Corinthians 7, those all speak clearly about it. And what our children need to know is that the sexual relationship between a husband and a wife is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It is God glorifying. And He gave us this union in order for married couples to fulfill their needs and desires, which are natural, by the way. We need to stress that to our children as well. As they're growing, as the hormones begin to raise, the desires are feeling, they're natural. That they're not evil, they're not wicked for these feelings. But it all comes down to controlling them and expressing them in the right way, and that's in the marriage bed. Dads and moms, we have to teach our children from this godly and biblical perspective. Part of training up our children in the Lord, Ephesians 6, verse 4, is doing this. And it also means that we take every opportunity, not that we bring this thing up every day, I mean, that would just be weird. But whenever the moment is right, whenever the subject is appropriate, we're sitting in the Super Bowl, we see this thing going on TV, we switch the channel, one of our kids says, "What are you doing?" And we tell them, "We're not going to watch that. I'm going to fill our minds with that." That's an opportunity to teach them when they lie down, when they rise up, when they walk in the way, when they go through the door, when they're outside. We take advantage of the opportunities when they present themselves. Parents, we must guard our children's hearts. We must. There's no way around it. And part of that, then, is simply being aware of what our youths are seeing and hearing on a daily basis. Be aware of what's going on in their lives. We need to be constantly communicating with our kids and keeping up with what they're listening to and what they're watching. We need to monitor to make sure that they're not filling their impressionable heart with garbage and with things that will only lead them down a pathway of immorality. And we got to know that's even true for the youngest among us. Because we're talking about a culture that's trying to influence and trying to warp our children's minds, and you don't think that's happening early on? Think about this children's shows. You know, it's incredible to me the number of shows that I watch now, that I watched when I was a kid, and the things I catch now as an adult, now that I've learned a few things I didn't catch then. You know, those kind of sneaky things they slide in kids' shows? I'm telling you, they're not just sneaking things in anymore. It's very overt. Arthur having a homosexual wedding in that TV show, that's real. Books that I've seen for children, friends so-and-so has two mommies. What we're seeing on TV with one of the presidential candidates that brought a 9-year-old boy, I believe it was 9 years old, onto the stage so that that 9-year-old could express to the world that he was a homosexual. No, he is not. It's some garbage. The media and the culture trying to influence us. But we have to recognize if we're seeing those things, our kids are probably seeing those things too. That's why we need to guard their hearts. Then we make sure that whatever the entertainment industry is feeding them, from movies to TV shows to music, we need to make sure that we are guarding them against those things that will negatively influence them. Because what they take in, we know is what's going to cultivate and eventually going to come out. That's the principle that Jesus gives forth in Matthew chapter 15, where Peter is concerned about eating bread without washing hands. And Jesus says, it's not what goes into you that defiles you. And he's talking about food there. But he said, what defiles you is what comes out. And what presents the best opportunity for bad things to come out of our hearts? Is it not whenever we let garbage in? We have to make sure that whatever we are consuming, what our children are consuming, that it is something that is good. What Alan read from us, from Philippians chapter 4, those things that are true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable. If there is anything of moral excellence, if there is anything praiseworthy, dwell on these things. Those are the things that our children need to be taking in. Not things that don't fit into this category like provocative Super Bowl halftime shows. If that's what we're allowing in all the time, if our children are constantly taking in that type of stuff, all we're doing is setting them up to be devoid of God's peace. The peace that comes through purity, holiness, and righteousness. We must seek to guard our children's hearts by steering them away from things that are going to simply corrupt them. We must be aware of what our children are taking in on a daily basis. But then lastly, and I'm going to get in trouble with all the kids here, so parents, you can throw this one on me. What we need to do if we want to help guard their hearts is we need to establish reasonable and appropriate boundaries to help preserve their purity. I know that ideally we would all love for all of our young people to be in full control of their emotions, of their hormones, and of their bodies because they have grown up in this setting. They've grown up in this church setting around good, godly people, and that's what they've seen. And we're thinking, well, they've seen our example, so they're only going to follow that. But we would be naive to think that it is smart to simply allow our children to live their lives with absolute freedom and without any sort of boundary. Think back to your youth. How would have things turn out for you if you didn't have any boundaries? I'm thinking about my youth. I did a lot of stupid things with my mommy all the time. I can imagine what foolishness I would have gone into if my mom wasn't on me. Boundaries are good, especially whenever they are reasonable and appropriate, and they're for the sake of preserving our children's purity. But you want to know what the greatest weapon, or the greatest danger, the greatest threat to the purity of our children is? Who's got a phone? Raise it up. Got a phone. See it. Right there. Well, they've got nothing. The smart device is the greatest threat to our children's purity that we have ever known in human existence. Because it is Pandora's box. There is nothing that they cannot find on that smartphone. So I know, again, the young people are not going to like me for this, but we would be wise to set parameters on our kids' phones to make sure that they are not viewing things that are inappropriate and destructive to their faith and to their purity. And that's a sad reality for young ages. The stat that is always thrown out in a lesson like this. What's the average age for a young person to view pornography for the first time? It used to be 13 and a half. Now the number's anywhere between 8 and 11. Let that sink in for a second. And that isn't to say, that isn't to say that this is our children searching those things out. Because often that's not the case. But here's the problem. There are perverted, evil people in this life who are going to try to put those things before your children's eyes. How many news stories have come out over the past few months of things that are usually innocent, YouTube and other video streaming platforms where these wicked, evil, perverted people have put horrible videos depicting things that nobody should see, especially children could see, in things that are normally innocuous. There have been a number of stories I've seen in that. Video games that are normally innocuous. The people have taken and perverted, and children have seen that. And we wonder why we're in the mess we're in. I tell you, I do not believe it wise to just turn our children loose with these smart devices, especially if we have not taken preventative steps to guard their hearts. There are apps, there are resources that can be downloaded, that can be subscribed to, that just won't allow certain things to be shown on your phones or on your devices. I encourage you to seek those things out and to take advantage of them. And if they cost money, I promise you it is money well spent. We must guard their hearts. And then finally, this also means, I believe, that we take time to have serious conversations with our young people as they mature about how they ought to carry themselves when they begin to date. We need to establish wise and responsible boundaries that will help them to preserve their purity. We were all young at some point. We all had the raging hormones. All of us experience the same. Therefore, we need to teach them how to behave in a godly manner, and then we need to help hold them accountable to God's standards so they can enter into their marriage relationship with their purity and with all sorts of happiness and with zero regrets. I might even encourage here just to hold off on the dating as long as you can. Obviously, that's a girl dad saying that. What's the joke here? Jesus didn't date, and He was here for 33 years, so Olivia can date him one more year, so 34. But the reality, is here. The earlier they start dating, the longer they're going to have to control themselves until they get married. We know our children best. Each of you as parents know your children best. Judge rightly. You know them. Do the right thing by them. I trust that you will. But we need to guard their hearts. Have real, serious, honest conversations with them. Follow the words from the Song of Solomon. Do not stir up or awaken love until the appropriate time. Let's do that for our children. Help them as best we can. Let me again say that I realize that this type of study is difficult to have because of the sensitive nature of the subject matter, but I do hope that we realize that this is an important discussion because we live in a world where our children and our young people are under attack. And they are being constantly assaulted by the wicked influences of the evil one. They are. And may God bless them. May God be with them as they strive to remain pure in a world that seeks everything but that. But let me mention this as well as we close. Let me mention this. That for anyone sitting here who has made mistakes in their past, whether you're young, whether you're old, whether you're in between, let me tell you that that does not mean that you are damaged goods. It does not mean that you are beyond God's grace. No matter what your sin is, even if it is of a sexual nature, God's grace can overcome. It can cleanse you. It can purify you, and you can stand justified in His sight, made completely whole. Don't be discouraged. Don't let past mistakes snowball and become worse and worse. Make the concerted effort to change now. Allow God's grace to change you and to forgive you. And may we all then strive to guard not just our own hearts. It's hard enough to guard my own, and I know it's hard enough for you to guard yours. But God has blessed us and entrusted us with so many beautiful young souls. And it is His will that we do everything that we can to guard their hearts as well. May God bless us in that. And may we embrace and remember the words of the Apostle Paul that we read earlier as we began this study. And may these words encourage us to live before Him in holiness, righteousness, and purity, rejecting the negative influence that is before us. May we remember that the night is nearly over and the day is near. So let us discard the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us put away the deeds of this world and live only for God and His glory.